Ladies and gentlemen, it's agreeable to you to take your seats. We may be able to begin very soon. I'll explain my presence here at this place in a moment. Our public relations department, whom we all affectionately know as Gladys, somehow threw out her lasso and it landed over me. And that's why I'm here. It reminded me of a situation many years ago when I began student work in Greater New York, and we had these student rallies. And the idea was to invite a very important person at church to give an address to the students. We had quite a few in those days, in their 40s, and they were up to 400 at a time. And I had received his agreement to come, and then there was a question of introducing him, and I suggested that a good friend of his introduce him and mentioned his name, and he said, "Oh, I don't think that's a good idea at all." He said, "I had just finished introducing him on a different occasion a few weeks ago, and I think my colorful descriptions of him might tempt him to use this opportunity to match me, and it might not be so desirable." So he said, "I think you will do. You're quite innocent about this. You don't know too much about me, so go ahead and introduce me." And I did so. Of course, I'm aware of the fact that there are men here, like Dr. Mayer and Dr. Rares, who know much, much more about the speaker than I could even hope to read about in a short time. He is a man who is an embodiment of history, you might say. He is a bridge between the old German Free Church, the Saxon Free Church, and the Missouri Synod. His career is notable. He attended the public school and the so-called Fürstenschule Meißen, which is a school for princes established in, I suppose, in the 16th century already. He attended the seminary, Free Church Seminary, and obtained his doctorate at the University of Heidelberg, a place where his two sons-in-law also obtained their doctorate, and they are now teaching at the seminary in Oberursel also, Dr. Rensch and Dr. Hoffmann. His services in the Saxon Free Church, I suppose, can be listed since he joined them before the war. He was a lieutenant during World War II, first lieutenant. After the war, he became professor and rector as principal or president of the Lutheran Seminary in Oberursel. And he was also president of the Saxon Free Church for about 6 years. After the union between the Saxon Free Church and the other churches, and he'll tell us more about that, he became a district president, what they call Propst in Germany. He's now retired and lives in Oberursel. Mrs. Kirsten is here also, and I'm going to ask her to stand up so that you can all see her. Mrs. Kirsten, the gracious lady, there she is. Would you please rise before your husband begins to speak? Thank you. Dr. Kirsten is here in this country at his own expense for the sake of understanding and also telling us, understanding the events here and telling us about events overseas in Germany, particularly those events which relate to the Selbstständige Lutherische Evangelische Lutherische Kirche, pardon me, SELK for short, and us. It's a great pleasure for me to introduce to you Dr. Kirsten.
Thank you very much, Dr. Klein, for your hearty welcome and for this introduction Yeah, it's in a way it's important to know something about my person, also for the purpose I have to speak about here. But first of all, let me say that I am not an English speaker. You heard I visited many schools, but in the schools I visited I learned many languages. I learned Latin and Greek and Hebrew, and for 7 years I learned French, but I learned no word in English. So I had to learn it privately for reading the English literature, especially the literature of the Missouri Synod. But now let me introduce something more myself about myself. You heard I'm a retired professor and have long been for long years the rector and president of the Lutherische Theologische Hochschule. Lutherische Theologische Hochschule in Oberursel. That means the Lutheran Seminary in Oberursel of the Selbstständige Evangelisch-Lutherische Kirche, shortened called SELK, S-E-L-K, in Germany. This church, the SELK, exists since 1972 as a merger of three Lutheran free churches in Germany. A merger. One of them was my church, the so-called Saxon Free Church, a church which in 1972 was nearly 100 years old. In 1969, I retired after being elected as the last president of the Saxon Free Church. The last president of the Saxon Free Church. So it happened that after the 1972 merger of our churches, I was elected as a so-called pope, you heard of our church. That means a district president and of the new church. And now finally I retired and I'm living in Oberursel and mostly doing literary work. And so it comes that I am here. I have in mind to write a book in Germany about the doctrinal union of our three free churches in Germany. And it was of some importance to get here and to do some research work here at the Historical Institute. And this is the reason that I am here. I am not here to hold lectures here. It's very hard for me to do so in your language, but I will try my best to tell you something about our work in Germany and so win your interest in this work. I just told you I was the last president of the Saxon Free Church. The last president of the Saxon Free Church. And this was my church, to which church I belonged as a pastor more than 50 years, since 1925, when I was ordained. This church had been organized in 1876. And was from its very beginning a church in fellowship with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. More, it was the only church in the 19th century outside of America to be in fellowship with Missouri. And I think it's important to bear this in mind, if you will understand what I am going to tell you about our churches. You know, Missouri had not many friends in the so-called Lutheran churches in the last century. And it is not much better now. So it was not only in America, same thing it was in Europe and in Germany as well. No Lutheran church has suffered more opposition and antagonism all over the world than Missouri. From its very beginning in 1847, when C.F.W. Walter and his friends founded the synod, up to now, when this church, your church, is about to renew its historic position as a church of the whole Bible and of the whole Book of Concord. If you could read what is currently being published, for instance, in German periodicals, about the situation here in Missouri, your hairs would stand on end. I have here a sample here from your library. These are the Lutherische Monatshefte. That's a German periodical for the Lutheran circuits in Germany. And here, in number 2 of this year, you find an article with the title Verteidiger der Orthodoxie, die Missouri-Synode nach der Zerreißprobe. That means Defender of Orthodoxy, Missouri Synod after the Rupture Test. Missouri Synod after the Rupture Test. And you can read it, or you, mostly you cannot. But it's worthwhile to read it just for this, that you understand a little of what the feelings are in Lutheran circuits of the land of the Reformation now about Missouri Synod. You will have an idea if you hear some of the undertitles. For instance, Retreat into Isolationism. Preuß contra Titian, Seminarists in Exile, Suspension and Cleaning, and the last has a title, The King Remains. Yeah. Well, but it's not so funny to read it, what is meant here and said here. Also, it's an instance for this, what I said, that Missouri Synod ever, in all times, had many, many antagonists, and up to now, it is not different. And there is nobody there who would defend you besides the little voice in Germany of our little church, the independent Lutheran church. But you know all this better than we do. You have your own experiences here. In any case, in all these times, since 100 years and more, you had in Germany, in the land of the Reformation, only one true friend: the Saxon Free Church, the German Missourians, as they called our fathers, and as they called us as long as we existed. By this name, meant as a nickname, they would say that they held our church for an American dependence, a foundation of the Missouri Synod in Germany. But this was not true. I give you some example after. It was not true from the very beginning of our church. It was not true all the time during the nearly 100 years that our church existed. Now, The Saxon Free Church exists no more, as I told you. This church is now part of a larger one, of the Selch, formed out of three Lutheran Free Churches in Germany. Though the two other Free Churches were not in fellowship with the LCMS, with the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, before the last war, now our whole church is in this state, and this is the fruit of our common work, of our doctrinal union, about which I am studying just now. Your last synodical meeting, the Dallas Convention, in 1977, confirmed this by finding the pertinent documents to be in agreement with the doctrinal position of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and so verbally declared itself to be an altar and pulpit fellowship with the Selbstständige Evangelische Lutherische Kirche, with the SELK, thereby continuing the fellowship it has enjoyed for many years with the member bodies. There were and are Lutheran Free Churches in Germany and Europe, even more of a dozen in the last century, of which I shall tell in a lecture a little more tomorrow afternoon. Here and now, I will speak only about the close ties which bound the Saxon Free Church for more than 100 years to the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, which in former times was called, you know it, die Deutsche Evangelisch-Lutherische Kirche von Missouri, Ohio und anderen Staaten, the German Evangelical Lutheran Church of Missouri, Ohio and other states. The Saxon Free Church was constituted in 1876 in Dresden, the then capital of Saxony, the Kingdom of Saxony. Five pastors and four congregations in the Kingdom of Saxony joined and formed a synod, a church, a Lutheran Free Church, named the Evangelisch-Lutherische Freikirche in Sachsen, means the Evangelical Lutheran Free Church in Saxony. As you know, Saxony played quite a role in the history of the Reformation and of the Lutheran Church. Saxony is the homeland of Reformation and of Luther himself. Luther was professor at Wittenberg, capital of Saxony in those times, and the electors of Saxony were his authorities. And you know of the role which later on Elector August and his theologians finally played in elaborating the formula of Concord. But Saxony was also the homeland of C.F.W. Walter, as you know, founder and father of your beloved church, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. From Saxony also came some of his first co-workers, like Löwer, Keil, Brohm, Fürbringer, and others. From Saxony as well came the people who formed the first congregations in St. Louis and in Perry County. So the Zion on the Mississippi was at first simply called the Saxon immigration. Accordingly, Saxony played quite a role in the very history of your church. By the way, Saxony, now in East Germany, is also my homeland. I was born in Annaberg in Saxony. There I grew up, and there I completed my first studies in Meissen and in Leipzig before I came to North Germany and served as a pastor in the Lüneburger Heide and at Hanover before war. But now back to the Saxon Free Church. After Walter and his Saxons had left Saxony back in 1838, although there were still active Orthodox Lutherans in Saxony, mostly laymen, in the 50s and 60s of the last century, who were not satisfied with the rationalism and unbelief on the pulpits of the state church. So these laymen came together in their own circuits in Dresden and at other places to read their Bible and the Lutheran confessional writings, and for this purpose they formed loose unions of mere laymen. They had no pastor who could help them. So-called Lutheranervereine, Lutheran unions. Some of them came in contact with the Lutheran Saxons in Perry County. And so it came about that they also began to read the Lutheraner and Walter's writings. Of course, they were deeply interested in the development of their own church, the Saxon territorial church, the state church in Saxony, which was nominally a Lutheran church. Like in all territorial churches of that time, rationalism had taken over, and the church government did not interfere when unbelief was preached from the pulpits. But the laymen, these laymen in the Lutheran unions, protested against this development more than once, and when in 1871 the so-called Religionseid, that was an ordination oath the pastors had to swear on the whole Bible and on the Lutheran confessions, it was so usual from the very times of the Reformation, and the Church of Saxony never had any change in this, different from the church in, for instance, in Prussia, where the union of the different confessions had been introduced. Not so in Saxony. Saxony in those times had a Lutheran territorial church, but this Religionseid was derogated in 1871 and was replaced, that was the influence of rationalism in this time, was replaced by some wishy-washy obligation, as it nach bestem Wissen und Gewissen, that means to the best of one's knowing and conscience. Also they were obliged to the confessions, and so it's now, up to now, to the best of one's knowing and confessions. And you understand, that means nothing. Also this happened in Saxony, and so it came that these laymen, all, only laymen, protested once more and presented formal petitions to the government, and finally in 1871, after all this was in vain, they declared their independence, their separation from the state church, and formed three independent Lutheran congregations in Dresden, Planitz, and Chemnitz. And this was the start, the beginning of the Saxon Free Church. But don't forget, these congregations consisted of mere laymen. They had no pastors. They were sheep without any shepherd. So it came that they turned to their Saxon brethren in the USA, writing a letter to Dr. Walter and requested him to send them a man,
a pastor,
who could be their pastor and leader. And Walter helped them. He sent them this man, a pastor of German offspring, Pastor Roland. He came to Dresden and was introduced into office on April 21st, 1872. And it was interesting for me to find here in the last number of the Concordia Historical Institute Quarterly edition of Dr. Silflo, an article, a pamphlet of C.F.T.H. Ruland, this first pastor of the Saxon Free Church. And it's very interesting to read this. It's a very interesting pamphlet. He wrote, I cannot go into the matter. Maybe you could make it a little more clear what this pamphlet meant. It would lead too far now to explain it. But so the common history of the Lutheran Church, Missouri's in it, and of the Saxon Free Churches began at this moment, and so this common history of both our churches lasted exactly 100 years. Exactly 100 years, from 1872 to 1972, when came the merger of our three free churches to the Independent Lutheran Church in Germany. But these congregations in Saxony were not the only Lutherans in Germany with whom Walter was in a close contact at that time. There were many eminent pastors, outstanding Lutherans in Germany, who were busy to help the new Lutheran Synod here in America and to send them money and men. And you know, of the most important men of this time, maybe there was Wilhelm Löhe in Bavaria and Friedrich Brunn in Nassau, now in Hessen. So it came to pass that when Walter was twice in Germany, in 1850 and in 1860, he visited these men, Löhe in 1850 and Friedrich Brunn in 1860. Löhe had collected money all over Germany and had sent over trained men who were co-founders of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in 1847 and had instituted the Fort Wayne Seminary, which was shifted after to Springfield and is now again in Fort Wayne. But after that, Löhe went his own ways. Maybe you know this history of the beginnings of the history of those both men. The result was that Walter more and more turned over himself to this other man, Friedrich Brunn, in Nassau, now in Hessen. When he visited his friends in Staden, that is a place where Brunn worked, in 1860, Brunn had left the Nassau Territorial Church. It's a long story to tell how this came about. You can read about it in English in a booklet published in 1972 by one of his grandsons, Pastor August Frederick Brunn. At that time, 1972, he was pastor in Pittsburgh, and he sent me a copy directly to me, and I tried to find a copy here in your library, but it was in vain. It's a must for you to know something about these things and about this man Friedrich Brunn. He's one of the outstanding men who helped so much to build up the Missouri Synod from Germany. Also, the title of this book is The Triumph of Truth. This man, this courageous and doctrinally sound man, Friedrich Brunn, was later on one of the closest friends of Ferdinand Walter and of the Missouri Synod in Germany. At Walter's request, he built up a theological pro-seminary in Staden in his own congregation. Here he prepared young men for theological studies in St. Louis and in Fort Wayne. In 1861, the first 7 students were accepted at Staden, but this number increased every year. They remained in Staden 1 or 2 years, and after they went to the United States, where they eagerly were awaited and received their further education. Brunn did this work for 25 years, and so more than 200 students were sent to St. Louis or to Fort Wayne. In the booklet written by August Brunn, you will find a list of all these men who afterwards served in the Holy Ministry of the Missouri Synod. There you will find names of still well-known pastors whose sons and grandsons are serving until now in your beloved church. Among them was one president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Friedrich Pfotenhauer from Celle near Hannover, and one professor of this seminary, Georg Metzger from Brunswick. The Metzger Hall remembers you. This man came to Germany at the end of his life, and so I get known to him in Zehlendorf. But what had this Nassau man, Friedrich Brunn, to do with the Saxon Free Church, you may ask? He was not a man from Saxony. But from the very beginning, he was very close to the congregations in Saxony. He had defended them publicly, and they read his journal, Lutherische Mission und Kirche. And so they turned to him for help, but he could not come to their aid. He was too far off in Nassau and had no man for them. And so it came that they turned to Walter, and he sent them this man I told you of. But in 1876, when the new church had been formally constituted, the Saxon Free Church, he defended them publicly in his journal, and 1 year later, in 1877, he even became a member, together with his congregation, with some of his congregations in Nassau, and together with his assistant pastors Hein and Eichmeier. So that from that time on, the Saxon Free Church was named the Evangelisch-Lutherische Freikirche in Sachsen und anderen Staaten, the Evangelical Lutheran Free Church in Saxony and other states. And there were now, in 77, 9 pastors and 6 congregations. Also in 71, they had no pastor. And then some pastors came out of the Saxon territorial churches, and then one pastor came from Hanover, and three pastors came from Nassau. So it was, now they had 9 pastors. The flock was no more alone. This was the beginning of the expansion of our Lutheran Free Church in later years all over Germany and in other countries of Europe. But there is one more man of these early times, of the beginnings of the Saxon Free Church, who was a Saxon and became a leading pastor in our church and afterwards a leading man in your church. And at this very institution here, the Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, this man was Georg Stöckhardt. I think it would be equivalent to bringing Olds to Athens to evaluate what he meant to your church and to the seminary. I hope you know a little about his history beforehand and how he came to this country and to this seminary. In the very beginning, he was our man. He was a man from Saxony and a pastor of the Saxon Free Church. Georg Stöckhardt was an offspring of an old generation of Saxon pastors. He was educated at first at the same famous college gymnasium which I myself attended, founded 1543 by Melanchthon and Elector Moritz of Saxony, the Fürstenschule St. Afra in Meißen, with an old humanistic tradition. He then studied theology in Leipzig, earned a doctorate in Erlangen, and afterwards became a state church pastor in Planitz, just at the place where in the meantime one of the three free Lutheran congregations in Saxony had come into existence. You may read in your own literature how it came about that this highly gifted and learned man left the territorial church of Saxony and confessed himself to be one with the free Lutheran congregations in Planitz, and then was called to be their pastor, and so he also became one of the founders of the new synod when in 1876 it was constituted. And if you can read German, you can read more of this in one of our last publications. In Oberursel we have a journal, Theologische Theologie, Lutherische Theologie und Kirche, Lutheran Theology and Church. And it is, I found it here in your library, in one of the last numbers, in number 3 of last year, I published myself an article, Aus dem Leben eines deutsch-amerikanischen Lutheraners, Georg Stöckhardt, out of the life of a German-American Lutheran, George Stöckhardt. And it was necessary to publish it because also it's the same thing as it is here. These beginnings are in danger to be forgotten. And it's important to have an idea how it all these churches, our beloved churches, came about and who were the men who had the most important influence on our churches. And so we think of this man as a man of ours. He was our man in the beginnings, and you may read in your literature how it came about that this highly gifted and learned man left the territorial church of Saxony and confessed himself to be one with a free Lutheran congregation in Planitz, and thus was called to be their pastor. He became the pastor of the Planitz congregation. He was the co-pastor with Ruland, and after his death, he was a man, he was for some time the only pastor in this congregation. And so he also became one of the founders of the new synod when in 1876 it was constituted. You may furthermore read how this man, as one of the spiritual leaders of the new church, was accused by his former church government. It's terrible today to understand this. He was accused of insult to the Christian religion because he wrote an article and they felt insulted by his church government by this article. He was accused of insult to the Christian religion and was condemned to prison. So that was a state church. And how Dr. Walter himself helped him out of this painful situation, having him called to Holy Cross Church in St. Louis, where soon the seminary took him over. He turned out, you know it, to be, next Walter himself, the most notable learned man the St. Louis faculty ever had in the times before World War I, and he died in 1930. Now I could call more names. I think especially of the Wilcombes and of the Stallmans, the leading men in the 19th and 20th century, and my predecessors in ministry and presidency of the Saxon Free Church. But you see from these few instances and names how close the relations were between your church and our Saxon Free Church for more than a century. Those close relations were interrupted by World War I and II. But we never shall forget what your church did to help our churches after those terrible wars, to rebuild the churches and especially to restore each time our seminary in Zehlendorf and after World War II in Oberursel. It is especially unforgettable for me and many of our brethren to recollect the first meeting with your then president, Dr. Behnken, when he came over in 1945, just after war, sent by President Truman to Germany, into our destroyed country, to visit our churches. And when he uttered, when after welcome and greetings, his first question was, "What can we do for you, brother?" An outward barrier became more and more the language. You can see it here. Most of us couldn't anymore read your literature. And just the same happened the other way around. And in a way, a graver barrier threatened through a different theological development. There was a time after World War II, in the times of the so-called Bad Bull and after, when it seemed as though our ways would go asunder in theology and in church practice. I will not go into this matter just now and here. You know it better than we do. What problems of theology and church fellowship arose in your midst, especially in this main seminary? And how great was the danger of defection from biblical truth and of your confessional standing? And maybe the danger has not been overcome finally. I would not say that this danger does not threaten our German church as well. But on the other hand, I must say, just the more it is necessary against this common danger that our churches do what they jointly can do and what they did in earlier times of this century of fellowship very often, namely to remain in very close contact with each other, to remain deeply concerned in what is going on in both of our churches, here in the United States and in Europe and in Germany. And this mostly to help each other, to remain steadfast on the ground which our fathers laid down more than 100 years ago. To this we pledge ourselves up to this day in the confessional articles of our respective constitutions. And let me end my treatise here in quoting these articles of our constitutions. I refer to what you say in Article 2 and 6 of your constitution, and to this that we say in the Grundordnung, the basic order of the SELK, of the Selbstständige Evangelisch-Lutherische Kirche, in the Grundartikel, in the basic articles. You say, Article 2, Synod and every member accepts without reservation, first, the scriptures of the Old and the New Testament as the written word of God and the only rule and norm of faith and of practice. Second, all the symbolic books of the Evangelical Lutheran Church as a true and unadulterated statement and exposition of the word of God, to wit, the three ecumenical creeds, the Apostolic Creed, the Nicene Creed, the Athanasian Creed, the unaltered Augsburg Confession, the small called articles, the large Catechism of Luther, the small Catechism of Luther, and the Formula of Concord. And in Article 6, conditions of membership, conditions for acquiring and holding membership in Synod, first, acceptance of the confessional basis of Article 2, and second, renunciation of unionism and syncretism of every description. And you may compare this with our Grundordnung, with our Article 1 of the Grundordnung and of the Grundartikel, the basic article. I will read it first in German. It's good to hear it, something in German. Some may understand German. And after I will give a translation. Article 1. Selbstverständnis und Bekenntnisstand. Die selbstständige evangelisch-lutherische Kirche steht in der Einheit der heiligen christlichen und apostolischen Kirche, die überall da ist, wo das Wort Gottes rein gepredigt wird und die Sakramente nach der Einsetzung Christi verwaltet werden. Sie bezeugt Jesus Christus als den alleinigen Herrn der Kirche und verkündigt ihn als den Heiland der Welt. I will translate it to English. Self-interpretation and confessional status, Article 1. The independent Evangelical Lutheran Church, the SELK, has its place in the unity of the Holy Christian and Apostolic Church, which is everywhere present, where the Word of God is purely preached and the sacraments are administered according to the institution of Christ. This church confesses Jesus Christ as the only Lord of the church and proclaims him as the Savior of the world. Now the second of this first article, the second part. Sie ist gebunden, die SELK, an den Heilige Schrift Alten und Neuen Testaments als an das unfehlbare Wort Gottes, nachdem alle Lehren und Lehrer der Kirche beurteilt werden sollen. Sie bindet sich daher an die Bekenntnisschriften der evangelisch-lutherischen Kirche, weil in ihnen die schriftgemäße Lehre bezeugt ist, nämlich an die drei ökumenischen Symbole, das apostolische, das nizänische und das athanasianische Bekenntnis, an die ungeänderte augsburgische Konfession und ihre Apologie, die schmalkaltischen Artikel, den kleinen und großen Katechismus Luthers und die Konkordienformel. That means in English, this church is bound to the holy scriptures of the Old and of the New Testament as the infallible word of God, according to which all teachers and teaching of this church shall be judged. Therefore, this church pledges itself to the Book of Concord as a confessional testimony of the Evangelical Lutheran Church, because in them the scriptural doctrine is confessed, namely the three ecumenical symbols, the apostolic, the Nicene, and the Athanasian Creed, the unaltered Augsburg Confession and its apology, the small called articles, the small and large Catechism of Luther, and the Formula of Concord. And in Article 2, we say about church fellowship, Kirchengemeinschaft, something, nämlich this: die selbstständige evangelisch-lutherische Kirche pflegt Kirchengemeinschaft mit allen Kirchen, die Lehre und Handeln in gleicher Weise an die Heilige Schrift und an das lutherische Bekenntnis binden. Sie verwirft die der Heiligen Schrift und dem Bekenntnis widersprechenden Lehren und ihre Duldung sowie jede Union, die gegen Schrift und Bekenntnis verstößt. Sie weiß sich darin einig mit der rechtgläubigen Kirche aller Zeiten. That means in English, Church Fellowship, the Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church is in fellowship with all churches which subject their doctrine and their practice in the same way to the Holy Scriptures and to the Lutheran confessions. This church rejects all teachings contrary to the Holy Scriptures and to the Lutheran confessions, and disowns all who tolerate unions which are contrary to the Scriptures and to the confessions. In this practice, this church is unanimous with all Orthodox churches of all times. And in this practice, I mean, we are unanimous with the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, as well. And may God bless the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and may He bless this common task we have in a common future.
Thank you, Dr. Kirsten. Don't walk away. He's reminded us somewhat of our roots, I suppose, with the exception that he came to us to tell us about him. We didn't have to do any traveling. He's willing to answer questions if you have those questions, and he asked me beforehand to remain here and help him in case he isn't quite clear about what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a question, would you please address it to Dr. Kirsten now? Yes, Dr. Meyer.
I would like to know whether the after World War II, the Bob Ball meetings, whether they gave an opportunity to the Free Church to do more witnessing to the state churches, to the territorial churches. I know that these Bob Ball meetings were initiated immediately after the war, and several thousand pastors of the Volkskirche attended these meetings.
Yes, it's true. Just after war, it was a great thing, these Bad Boll meetings, and I myself had the opportunity to attend them. And but I must say, this is long, long ago, and the impression did not last very long time. At that time, it was a very deep impression, I must say. So many, many Lutherans just after war were, you know, were in a state that it was helpful for them to regain their own standing. And I think it was not in vain what they did. But you know what happened after in Germany, and what was the way of the Lutheran theology, and what was the way of the Lutheran churches. And now, you know, these new confessions which they adopted in the meantime, this, what's the name of this last one? Leuenberg, the Leuenberg Concord is now the basic of the teaching. And so I must say it's not too much left of this wonderful work Missouri did at those times.
Very often these events aren't too durable, and I suppose this is one instance of the same kind. Are there other questions that you'd like to... Yes?
How large is the Free Church today?
Well, we have about 50,000 people in this independent evangelical Lutheran church. And you must know, our church is separated in a way. We have one part, the largest part of our church is in Western Germany, and a kleiner, smaller part is in Eastern Germany, and I told you Saxony belongs to Eastern Germany, my homeland. And so it comes that we are, our churches are divided. And so it comes that in Western Germany we have this merger, we had this merger, but in Eastern Germany we had not up until now.
How are the pastors in Eastern Germany trained? Do any of the pastors from Judaea over Hochschule go to East Germany, or must they all be trained in place?
Yeah, also in the beginnings we had this common seminary in Oberursel, and many of the pastors who are now in Eastern Germany had their studies in Oberursel, and there were excellent men between them. But after, they were forbidden to come to Oberursel, and so it was necessary to have their own seminary in Leipzig now. And they do what they can, and they have good men in Leipzig, and the work goes on also. But it's a real pity that we are separated and cannot do common work in Germany.
Any more questions? Dr. Kirsten, we thank you again for this presentation, the reminder of our own background. Bless you.
Thank you.